In a world where a man loves movies and loves lists and keeps a list of his 100 favorite movies for over 30 years, what if he made his wife watch those movies in order? And what if he made her talk about it on a podcast? Would she like them? Would she hate them? Can this marriage possibly survive this podcast? Find out what will happen in a world called Craig's List.
Craig's listeners, I have done it. They called me mad, but I have made out of scraps of people the perfect podcast co-host. She is childlike. Right now, she doesn't even know what a podcast is, but she's learning rapidly. Hello, Carla. Say hello.
Oh, hello.
Oh, hello. Well, you seem surprised to be here.
Yeah, Carla. So hungry.
You just had a kale Caesar from Trader Joe's for dinner?
What more?
You just had a bunch of chips as well.
More.
Okay, well, we do have more chips if you
want. More.
Okay, Carla, we have to record the episode first.
No, Carla, no record till food more and belly.
This is just like the old Carla. Why did I bother creating a new one in a lab? Hi, Carla.
Hi, Craig.
It's Craigslist Best of 2023 episode. Clink.
Clink.
We just clinked two Trader Jose's beers, mm-hmm. which are somehow the exact same and way better than Corona at the same time.
Yeah.
It's been a year.
Since we've seen each other?
What have you been up to in the last year?
Well, I've had a mad romance with myself. We just moved.
We did. Our life has actually changed quite a bit since the last time we did this. Or it's changed just within the last month. We have lived in the Atwater Village neighborhood of Los Angeles, and now we're in the Culver City.
Are you okay?
I'm emotional just thinking about it. Actually, we're no longer in Los Angeles. We're in Culver City, which is its own city.
Yeah, which I didn't know until we moved here.
We're still in Los Angeles County, but how are our lives different in this new place?
Much better.
Benny's still here.
Benny's still kicking.
He's under the table.
He's pissed because we're not giving him any food. We did give him food for dinner, but he wants more food.
Of course, we feed our dog.
We feed our dog. Should we tell them that we were doing poor things at the top of this?
Do you think they don't know that that was poor things?
I just hope they know what it was. Also, I've never heard that noise.
And of course, now that we're singing the praises of how quiet our new place in Culver City is,
yeah.
Some sort of loud
garbage truck.
Garbage truck backing up
is into our building
right now. So we'll see if we make it through an entire episode, but I'm happy to be here.
Me too. This is going to be fun.
Carla's happy to be here, and we're happy that you're with us. If you still subscribe to Craigslist, this is a little surprise, isn't it? Or have you been waiting by your phone for a year?
I bet they haven't.
Waiting for more Craigslist. I know we promised that we would be doing the 11 new Craigslist movies.
I promised nothing.
I did promise that, and I'd like to stick to my promises, Carla.
Yeah.
We are going to do these episodes. We've had a year, and now our lives are a little more settled.
No more strikes.
Maybe. Like, it was a rough year. Yeah. And, we also have a co-host lined up.
We do.
Which I don't think I knew last year when we were recording for the new Craigslist episodes. It's going to be Craigslist super guest, Jamie Moyer.
Woo-hoo!
So she's agreed to do all 11 movies.
I don't know how, because she's the busiest person.
And she lives nowhere near
in
us.
In the world.
So we'll figure out how that's going to work.
I'm really good friends with her and haven't seen her in like 3 months because she's so busy. So.
Well, we hope she's listening now and remembers that she agreed to do this and will be guilt-ridden enough to drive down to Culver City 11 times to maybe watch some movies.
Yeah, right.
And some long ones, too.
Stop sneaking peeks at my list.
I know nothing about your list, though I do imagine that Poor Things might be on there somewhere. Maybe. But this is how this is going to go, Carla. We're going to do our top 10 movies of 2023.
Okay.
Did you see 10 movies in 2023?
Barely.
Okay.
The movies I saw, I think like as I'm getting older, I'm getting really good at deciding what I would like from the trailer, or at least what I would find interesting, even if I didn't like it. So there were several huge movies that I did not see because I am not interested.
Carla, would this include Oscar Best Picture frontrunner Oppenheimer?
It would. And I know that people are rolling their eyes listening to this, but I just didn't want to see it. And then I was like, oh, fine, I'll see it before we did this list podcast.
We have a screener.
But I just couldn't make myself sit down and watch it. And maybe I'll regret it. And that's fine. There are worse things to regret, I think.
Maybe there's a portion of Craig's listeners that are rolling their eyes. And maybe there's a portion of Craig's listeners that are standing up and applauding.
Well, I will say I felt so validated when we were at a holiday party in December. And there was a group of us talking about movies. And it was maybe all women and you sitting at this table.
Uh-huh.
And one of the women said, I'm not going to see that, and I'm not going to see Napoleon, and I'm not going to, and she listed all of these like male German things. She was like, I don't need to see those types of movies anymore. And all the women at the table were like, yeah, me either. So it felt a little validating. Not to say that it's only a male movie. I'm not trying to dismiss it entirely, but the way it was presented felt very masculine and like about, you know, a bomb. And there's
bombs
so much
are male.
Horrible tragedy in the news right now. I just couldn't bring myself. I just couldn't get in the mood, even though I'm sure the performances are incredible.
But surely you saw Marty Scorsese's Killers of the Flower Moon.
Absolutely not. I will never see that movie. Oppenheimer, I think I might regret not seeing, but Killers of the Flower Moon, I will not regret. I do not like Martin Scorsese. I am 43 years old and I have seen several of his films and I know that I do not like him, whether or not he has an amazing, you know, Native American actress who's in the lead.
Lily Gladstone.
Who's nominated and everybody says is incredible. I'm sure she is. I'm sure she is. The clips I've seen, she seems incredible. But I'm not going to sit through another Morton Scorsese.
Morton Scorsese.
I'm not going to sit through another Morton movie. I don't want to.
You don't have 3.5 hours to spare?
No, I don't. I would rather read that book than I would watch the movie.
It's a great book. I read the book.
My best friend Angie, also a Craigslist guest, read the book and highly recommended it. I think she really liked the movie too. And I really trust her. We agree on a lot of the same kind of films. But I'm still not going to do it.
Is there anything else that you want to have seen?
Yeah.
You haven't gotten to yet?
I wanted to see that boxing movie with all the guys.
Oh, it's wrestling, I think. The Iron Claw?
Wrestling. Yeah,
We have not seen that.
Oh,
yeah.
We haven't seen it either.
No, I haven't seen it. It's got Zac Efron and, Jeremy Allen White.
Yeah, I wanted to see that. I've heard good things. But again, I just couldn't ever get myself in the right mind frame to watch a bunch of guys tackle each other or whatever they're doing.
We haven't seen Origin, which is the Ava DuVernay movie based on Cast.
Like, yeah.
And we haven't seen All of Us Strangers.
Which we were going to watch.
We almost started watching it. But
I have a feeling I'm going to love that.
Realized we should just watch that. So we can say that maybe All of Us Strangers might make your top 10.
It's a British
movie by the guy who did 42 Years with Andrew Scott and Paul Mescal.
Yeah. And I really, really loved 42 Years. I have a feeling I will like that movie. Sorry, I just couldn't get to it. There's been a lot going on. Moving is exhausting. It is. Moving is exhausting. It's taking up a lot of focus.
But so we'll do our top 10 for the year. We'll do our top 10 performances. I have mine ranked. I don't think yours are ranked.
No, mine are just my favorite 10 performances.
Great.
It's not that I think they're the best performances. It's just 10 performances that I really enjoyed.
Your choices are always surprising to me.
I don't think they're going to be that surprising.
Okay. Because you only saw 8 movies.
I only saw 8 movies. I hope that nobody has turned this podcast off yet because they're like, we can't take this seriously because Carla hasn't watched anything this year.
Half of them are turning it off and half of them are standing and applauding. Which is now a quarter of our total listeners are standing and applauding.
Right, right. Well, everybody's listening to it for you anyways.
That's not true.
Sure.
That's not true.
It's your list.
You come for Craig, you stay for Carla.
Yeah, you do. Sorry.
We're trying to turn that into a double entendre.
Sure.
And then we'll do our Oscar predictions.
Yeah, which I really don't know. I really liked a lot of movies this year, though. I'm excited to talk about them this year, more so than most years.
You feel this was a good year?
Yeah, I think last year I liked a lot of movies, too.
And compared to the previous years of the pandemic.
Right.
Are we still in the pandemic, by the way?
I think we are, but not according to the CDC. You don't even have to stay home anymore, right? If you have COVID?
No. They're saying just get out there.
They're like, just get out there. Live your life.
Get out there and cough on people.
All right.
But I'm willing to believe that you went to the physical movie theater more time in the last year than you had probably in the previous 3 years.
For sure. For sure.
And we had some good times at Alamo.
Yeah.
Like, there's an Alamo Draft House now in downtown LA. It's been there for a few years, I think, but I hadn't gone until this year.
I saw Parasite there years ago, so I have been.
Okay, so it's been there since 2019, but for some reason I just
was. Well, the pandemic.
Yes, I was a late adapter, and it's a game changer.
Yeah.
Like, it's
fantastic.
It's so fun, and I think a couple of the movies might have been things that we saw at Alamo.
Mm-hmm.
And we might have seen some things at SAG events, at screeners, as well, which is always fun to kind of see them a little in advance with a audience full of actors who are maybe overly demonstrative.
Right.
Trying too hard to show.
They just love it.
They love it.
They can't help it. They're actors.
So let's dive right in then, Carly.
Okay.
I don't think you saw 10 movies, so I'm guessing there are no.
No, I did.
Okay.
I actually had, I think, 17 movies on my list.
Oh, interesting. Do you have anything that was an honorable mention that, like, did not quite make your top 10?
Well, I had, like, some music documentaries that I really enjoyed this year.
Interesting.
But I couldn't say they were, like, the best movies of the year.
Sure.
But I really enjoyed Love to Love You, the Donna Summer documentary.
Hmm. On HBO, yeah. Or Max.
But that's considered a film from the year, right?
I would think so.
The Wham documentary was really good. Not the George Michael one, but the Wham one about where it was more, you know, about his partner. What's the guy's name?
Andrew Ridgely.
Yeah. Like through his lens. And then it ends before or as George Michael goes off to do his own thing.
It was very sweet. And they had so much archival footage that was surprising and incredible. Yeah.
And I think
highly recommend that.
I feel like a lot of people panned that, but I didn't know a lot of that stuff about Wham because I was more of just the George Michael generation. Like he was super famous.
Sure.
And so any Wham song I knew as his song. And obviously I still can't remember the other guy's name. So sorry about that.
I just said Andrew Ridgely like a minute ago.
No, I know, but yeah. I didn't remember it until then. And then the Joan Baez, I Am a Noise doc was great.
Yeah. I recommend that as well. She's just a fascinating person who's led a very full life.
Yes. And then I thought Aporia was really interesting.
That's a movie that we saw at a Television Academy screening.
Yeah.
I am an Emmy voter, as I maybe have humble bragged about before. And so we get to go to this beautiful screening room in North Hollywood. Aporia is an indie movie with Judy Greer. Very low budget, and the other two actors in it are also fantastic as well. And I think it is streaming now, possibly on Hulu, like, APORIA, like, look it up. It's like, it's not been.
It's a time travel movie that's an indie movie, and they do it in an indie way, and it's really impressive how they pull it off without a lot of money or, like, special effects.
It was grounded and believable.
Yeah.
And still had like a sci-fi kind of premise.
Yeah.
And the performances were great.
Yep. So that was, but it didn't make my top 10.
Okay.
And then I don't have this on my list, but I do think Saltburn was a really interesting movie that I didn't like.
We may be talking about it in a second.
Oh, really?
Okay.
I'm shocked it's on your list. You saw a lot of stuff. Okay.
Do you have 32 Sounds on your top 10?
I do.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about that when we get to it. I was going to mention that as an honorable mention for me.
Yeah. It's on my top 10.
So what's your number 10 movie of the year?
My number 10 movie of the year is Theater Camp.
Theater Camp. Okay.
Yeah. I thought it was really funny. I know you did not like it.
I thought it was okay.
Like, I thought it was really fun. I didn't think it was perfect, but I laughed an awful lot and I related an awful lot. And it just had that Waiting for Guffman vibe that I think is so fun, obviously, because it's like small community style theater, but for kids in this one. And I actually saw a screening with a bunch of theater kids, like, who are still teenagers, because I went with the Yada group of teachers. And so it was like packed with
teens. And did they love it?
They loved it. They were going nuts.
They
felt seen. And it was really cute and fun. And it was just like a really fun movie going experience. And I laughed a lot. I didn't think it was perfect, but it's fine. Like, it's a smaller film, and it just brought me a lot of joy. And I would watch it again.
Yeah, maybe I was just not in the right mood or whatever. It didn't make me laugh that much. I did really like the one kid who I guess is from the dick drawing show.
Yes.
Which I never saw.
Yeah.
So I had no idea.
American Vandal?
American Vandal. So yeah. I have no idea who he was or whatever. But and at first in the movie, I was like, what's going on with this guy? Like, he's in a completely different thing.
Oh, he's so funny.
And then once I realized, like, how in control of his performance he was, like, he was the most impressive part of it to me. Like, I thought he was super funny.
Totally. That's my number 10.
I have You Hurt My Feelings at number 10.
Did I see that?
It is a Nicole Holofcener movie.
Oh, I forgot about that movie. You should have reminded me. That would have been in my top 10.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. Where would you have it?
I don't know. I don't have to worry about it now.
Okay. You don't have to worry about it because I'm covering
it. I liked that a lot.
So, you know, she's got a very specific vibe, like following the travails of, you know, upper class white people, particularly middle aged women. And Julia Louis-Dreyfus has kind of been her muse for the last couple movies.
Yeah.
And so her husband is Tobias Menzies from The Crown and Game of Thrones, you know, British actor. And she, is a writer. Kind of like a middling success, and she accidentally overhears him talking about how bad he thought her book was. And so it's just kind of about
it like makes her question everything about their relationship.
Yeah.
Even though they've been in a really happy marriage for years and years.
Yeah. I mean, it's small, like all Holofcener movies are, it's perfectly well observed, like great dialogue, really kind of like nice, cringy, comedic moments, great cast. Like, it was a delight.
It must have been almost a year ago that we saw that.
It was very early in the year. Yeah. That's probably why.
Yeah.
It slipped your mind.
I really like that director, writer director. I enjoyed that.
So I have Saltburn at number 9.
You do. I thought you didn't like it.
Man, it was a frustrating movie, but I think there was so much about it that sold it for me. Like, about an hour in, we saw it at a SAG screening with a packed house.
Yeah.
And so during the gross parts, they were viscerally reacting.
Or sexy parts.
Or sexy. Gross, sexy, scary, funny, creepy. Like, it's all of that. But I thought it had some of the best cinematography of the year.
Yeah.
And about an hour into that, I'm like, this is probably the best movie I've seen this year. And then it completely fell apart from there.
Yeah.
But it's Emerald Fennell, you know, who also did Promising Young Woman. And that was a movie I thought that was a little better overall.
Mm-hmm.
But like, she's making these provocative movies that don't totally work, but they're really ambitious and they're pushing buttons, and I have to respect that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's a super interesting movie that I think about still. It's very provocative. But the reason I can't get on board ultimately is because it feels a little bit like a 25-year-old who's like, you know, on stage, like shitting on the stage or whatever, just to provoke the audience. And you're like, why? You know, like, I I was on board, like you said, up until maybe even until the last half hour. But then I just didn't understand the point she was trying to make. It was interesting to listen to her talk about it at the Q&A and how she was talking about how she wrote it in the beginning of the pandemic and when nobody could be around each other and like everybody was afraid of bodily fluids. And like, so you can kind of see where that all that originated, that idea or that, you know. Yeah, that idea. But it just like, it feels so hopeless at the end that I was just like, oh, I guess I just can't get on board with it.
Like bleak.
Bleak. It's very bleak. It's very, but it's interesting. Even that last scene is super interesting, but it just jumped the shark for me.
Love the final scene with him going through the mansion.
Yeah.
I won't spoil any more than that. But yeah, I think she tries to do some like things that are twists and turns with it and things that feel like they're surprises or reveals that are not surprises at all.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what I meant by it falls apart, but I've got it in my top 10 because I think its highs were so high for me.
Yeah, the performances were great. We've talked about this, but we'll talk about it again. I loved you usually only see those big British mansions like in a Jane Austen movie or whatever. You don't normally see them in a more modern, even though Saltburn, at least the first part of it takes place like 20 years ago, but it's like the early aughts or whatever. You never see those locations in a modern movie. And so like when they're all sitting around at the pool party and like drinking and hanging out at like this fancy pool. You know, like that was so fun. I thought that was really interesting.
And those places still exist and people live in them.
Exactly.
And it's those kind of like old money people that like don't really have money, but like they're high status, people in the UK.
Yeah.
And that's who owns those houses.
I wonder if that's true though nowadays, if people still live in them, but I don't know.
Well, maybe they're Airbnbs now.
Maybe that's what I mean. Like, it feels like they might be like movie locations that they rent out for Saltburn. Yeah.
What did you have at number 9?
I had I had Polite Society.
Polite Society,
which we saw back in June, maybe.
Yes, yes, it was streaming on Peacock.
Yeah.
Yes. That was a very fun movie.
It was a very fun movie. It was, it's been a minute since I've seen it, but it was surprising. Like you think it's going to be one movie and then it kind of turns into something else. At first I was like, oh, it felt like it was over a half an hour into it. But then there was a revelation of something that escalated the plot.
Yeah.
In a surprising and fun way. And it was just like, it's like an action movie with women and like young women in the leads.
So that's by the writer director who did We Are Lady Parts.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Which I love.
Which was a great,
I'm waiting for the second season.
I think they've only done the one series. Yeah. British series about Muslim women in a punk band.
Yeah.
Which is just hilarious. And yeah, in Polite Society.
Not Muslim. It's not funny that Muslim women are in a punk band. It's the situations they find themselves in.
The joke goes beyond that. Yes. But yeah, this also had some great fight scenes.
It really did.
As well.
Yeah. And I just thought in terms of like, I don't want to spoil anything, but the way that the story heightens, it's surprising and it just keeps heightening and it gets worse and worse for the main character. Which I think is really fun.
How about your number 8?
Number 8, May December.
Ooh. I also have it on my list.
You have it higher.
I have it higher.
Interesting. Yeah, this is all a little tricky for me. You know how I feel about ranking things.
Sure. Your mood may differ.
You could ask me
tomorrow.
Next week and December could be like number 1. Like who knows? But
generally you're a pretty big Todd Haynes fan.
I am. I really like Todd Haynes. Even when I don't love his movies. I think he always does super interesting, thought-provoking films. Carol is like an amazing movie for me. I love that film.
Well, yeah, he's a bit of a provocateur. Like he wants to make movies about, you know, uncomfortable areas. And this definitely was a cringy, squirmy movie. But also he's just an auteur.
An auteur.
An auteur.
Yeah.
Of the highest degree. And there are some shots in May, December that are so well staged. Them into the bathroom mirror.
Yeah. Also, it's like such an interesting, I mean, I listened to a podcast. Oh, I think it was Ben Blacker's podcast with, the writer and how this was kind of like her, she's been writing for years, but this was her big breakthrough script and how she knew when she wrote this one that it was better than anything she had ever written before. That was cool. And, I think it's just an interesting idea to take like a tabloid story and make it important and dramatic.
So it's loosely inspired by the Mary Kay Letourneau story.
Or just stories like that, I think.
Stories like that.
But that's like such a huge part of the millennial experience, I think, and maybe even Gen X. But like tabloids were such a big deal in the 90s and the, you know, 2000s. I don't know if they're, I guess they still are, but maybe in a different way. Maybe it's more like true crime stuff that has become tabloid. But yeah, to kind of like humanize that and look at it from so many different angles, I just thought was really wild.
It also feels like he's, parodizing or commenting on trashy Lifetime style movies off of tabloid events. And this movie really got kind of overlooked by the Oscars, I think. You know, I think most people
like it, I don't think.
Most people felt like it was going to get at least one nomination between Julianne Moore, Natalie Portman, and Charles Melton.
Yeah.
And nothing. It got a writing nomination.
Which it deserves, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a small film. It's a small story, I guess. Because it's like nothing that I can relate to. You know what I mean? It's like not things that all of us can relate to in terms of like what we've gone through, but it's things that we've all kind of witnessed from afar. And I think he plays with that idea. And that's Natalie Portman's character's role in it, right? It's just, she's been the one who's like absorbed this story and is now going to like be the conduit into which people get to witness it on Lifetime or whatever version of that is in the film.
And there's a meta element too of like, I'm the actor who's going to bring the truth to this.
And how seriously she takes herself is so funny.
And then I won't spoil it, but we eventually see like her version of the truth. And like, it's,
you spoiled it. It's too late.
Yeah. Okay.
Just kidding. I guess what we usually say, and I've forgotten, is that if you're listening to this podcast, you're going to hear spoilers.
Well, we'll try not to be that specific about it, but yes, we're talking about all the movies of 2023 that hopefully you've seen a lot of these.
Yeah, we're out of practice. Well. We forgot to give our disclaimer at the top.
My number 8 movie was The Holdovers.
Yeah.
Do you have that on your list?
No.
No. So we saw this, over Thanksgiving, right?
Yeah,
at a theater in Denver, the Mayan Theater, which is a great place to see a movie.
Yeah. It's like an old-timey, like Art Deco style theater.
With faux Mayan decorations.
Right.
It's Paul Giamatti, you know, being a mean teacher with a heart of gold.
Yeah.
Spoilers.
Yeah.
And probably the front runner for supporting actress, which is Divine Joy Randolph.
Mm-hmm.
And then the young kid in it, whose name is Dominic Sessa, his first movie ever. So it's basically prep school movie, not only set in the early 70s, but Alexander Payne making it look exactly like it's like the film has a little like grain to it and everything. And like the opening titles kind of look like it's an old movie of like, clearly he's going for kind of a Harold and Maude.
Yeah.
Like Hal Ashby kind of vibe there. But, I just found it like all Alexander Payne movies, really well written and just like grounded characters and relationships that you just care more about as the movie unfolds.
Yeah.
So why'd you leave that off your top 10?
I just didn't really care about it that much. I didn't think it was bad.
I just felt like we've seen this movie before.
Yeah. Like I came out of it and I was just like, I've seen this before. Like, I don't know what the big deal is. Like, I feel like I've seen this version of this story with a teacher and student who change each other's lives for the better, even if there is fallout from the relationship or whatever, you know? and maybe not in that exact year, but certainly in all kinds of decades. Like, we've just seen this movie so many times. I love Paul Giamatti. I loved Divine in High Fidelity. I thought that TV show, that was so great. She was amazing in that. And
really a shame that it only lasted one season.
I thought it was a fantastic show.
And for a gender-bending take on the original Cusack movie, like, they couldn't have done a better job with it.
So it wasn't that I didn't like anybody in it. It was just kind of like it felt typical to me.
All right.
And I also like Alexander Payne, but it's just like, all right. I don't know. Just wasn't that big of a deal for me.
Didn't surprise you.
No. It didn't move me or anything.
So number 7, I have Anatomy of a Fall.
I have 32 Sounds.
Okay.
What do you want to talk about first?
Let's talk about 32 Sounds because people may not have heard of this.
So it's an immersive documentary about sounds.
We saw it at Vidiot's, which is like such a cool new movie theater / video store in the Eagle Rock neighborhood of LA. Mm-hmm. We saw Mark Duplass there.
Yeah.
At this same screening, so you know it's cool.
It felt very indie movie right away. But they give you headsets when you see this film. And so they're like, you explain it. I just.
There's no audio.
I just hit my wall with beer. I just realized.
Your wall of beer.
My wall of beer made it impossible for me to say the sentence. I should just say, go ahead.
Well, let's see if this sentence contains some of the words you were hoping to find.
Yeah.
There's no audio played within the movie theater. Everybody has their own individual headset, and it's just a documentary about the way that we as humans process sound.
So it's the technology that they use. Please jump in as I go off course here. The technology that they use is as you would hear sound in real life. So if there's like a quarter dropping behind me, the way that they have calibrated the headset is that you hear it behind you. As opposed to just stereo or whatever you would, surround sound or whatever you would get in a theater, right? Am I saying that correctly?
No, I think you're right. And it just kind of like hits it on like so many like different emotional levels and just the way that we experience this sense. I don't even know like how this is going to translate to a streaming.
I don't think experience. It will. I don't think they can.
So if you see that 32 Sounds is playing anywhere near you, get there right now.
Yeah.
Our friend Julie said she saw it with actually a live DJ or live band playing.
Oh, really?
So they've had screenings with various degrees of how you're experiencing the sound, but I think that the personalized headset is part of it. And it was just beautiful.
Yeah, they talk to different people who are experts in different types of sounds and capturing sound. And specifically, there's this one woman who's been recording sounds since she was in her 20s. And she's now, I believe, in her 70s, maybe early 80s. And so she has just years and years of recorded sound and how she like connects to sound now versus when she was younger. It's interesting.
She's recording like the flow of rivers in upstate New York.
Yeah, like she puts the microphone into the water and you can hear sounds that nobody has ever recorded before.
And so you're asked to close your eyes at various parts of the screening as well and just experience the sound.
Yeah. And then there's the one about the bird, which I won't spoil.
Yes. So I had it at number 11 for the year.
Okay.
But I'm glad that it made your top 10 so we can talk about it.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Do you also have Anatomy of a Fall?
Oh, and I tried to – remember that was the day I tried to get high before we went? So I was like, I think I'm going to get high for this. And then my edibles didn't kick in until afterwards when we had dinner with friends. Anyway, I hope that I'm not triggering anyone with all of my booze and drugs talk. Forgive me. I really don't get high that often. It was embarrassing. I was like, I meant to be high during this screening, not at dinner.
So get a good buzz on and go see 32 Sounds.
But if you're doing edibles, give yourself 3 hours before you go to the film.
Now, did you take edibles during Anatomy of a Fall?
No.
Okay.
Is that your next one?
That's my number 7 movie, yes.
I loved Anatomy of a Fall.
Do you have it higher on your list?
I do.
Then? Okay. This was another one we saw at TV Academy. And so French film, the basic premise, the lead actress Sandra Hüller is deservingly nominated for Best Actress this year. It kind of had gotten some buzz already, but it's been cool to see, like we saw it many months ago,
right,
that it actually did get those Oscar nominations, yeah, like they were hoping for and everything. Best Picture, Best Director, and Best Actress. So she's a German woman living in France, married to a Frenchman. They live at like a chalet in the Alps, and her husband falls out of the top level of their home to his death, and then she gets tried for his murder.
Yeah.
So it's kind of meant to be one of these did she or didn't she, you know, ambiguous things, but there's more there's deeper stuff going on beyond that.
Okay, so this would be one part you would want to fast forward through if you don't want to hear spoilers.
Okay, we're going to spoil.
I'm not going to say how it's going to end, but I'm going to talk about what it explores, which is what you were just saying, like, did she or didn't she? That's what you think it is going into it. But then it's actually, it doesn't really matter so much if she did or she didn't, you know? I don't know that that question's totally answered. I like how they kind of still leave it up to you at the end, but it's more about how women are kind of persecuted and put through, the criminal justice system in France or whatever. And it was really fascinating to watch the trial because if this movie is correct, which I'm assuming it is, like the way that they handle these things is very different from how people are on trial here. Not that we have a system that makes sense either, but the way that she was just like sitting and listening and then they can turn and ask her questions and how she has to kind of defend herself almost at points because they can be so accusatory. It's really interesting.
It's fascinating because we've seen so many American trial movies to just get a sense of how another culture approaches justice. And then great performances like her visually impaired son, her friend who becomes her lawyer, the prosecuting attorney who's just an asshole, and the dog is the best dog performance of the year.
Of course.
As well, had a very difficult role.
It reminded me, I think we might have talked about this. It's been so long ago we saw it, I can't remember it. It reminded me a lot of that Meryl Streep movie about the dingo ate my baby.
Which I've never seen, Cry in the Dark.
We should watch that. I haven't seen it in probably 20 years, but it's a good movie from what I remember. But it like focuses more because this was years before it came out that she was innocent, right?
Yeah.
Because this was like made in the 80s or whatever, this Cry in the Dark. But it's more about like how she was persecuted for the looks that she made or how she didn't respond or how she didn't behave. And like this is also similar to that. Like they really put her on trial for not responding a certain way. Like when you're, you know, in mourning or when you're devastated by a spouse's death, how you're supposed to act a certain way. And we all know enough because of true crime podcasts that nobody acts a certain way when tragedy strikes, you know, like there isn't a way that everybody on earth acts, you know? So that was interesting.
But so much presumption of guilt in those situations.
Yeah.
Or responsibility is based on how a normal person is supposed to behave. And there's no such thing.
There's no such thing.
What do you have at number 6?
Wait, did I tell you my – oh, yeah. Number 6, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret.
I did not see this movie.
I think you would love it.
I've heard of it.
It's great.
I read the book when I was in middle school.
Of course you did.
Because I wanted to know what the girls were experiencing. Yeah, I was that in touch.
I wish I would have read the book before I read the book when I was a kid, but I wish I would have reread it because obviously it's fast and I also have it here. It's like on the bookshelf here. My same copy from when I was a kid. But no, it's just really well done. And they just did – when I heard they were doing it, I didn't even – care, and I didn't go see it in the theater, and I should have. I watched it on a plane and I was sobbing and I was just like, this is the best. They did such a great job.
Altitude may have been a factor.
Maybe. It's getting really good. It was on when I was researching, trying to remember what movies I had seen. I kept typing in best movies of 2023, and it's on a lot of top lists.
Yeah.
It's just really sweet, and I think it is accurate, and they do a nice job of like, just yeah, honoring the book, but also like making you remember, like, yeah, it did feel that way when you were a kid.
I can't wait to see it. I did enjoy watching the Judy Blume documentary that came out, I think, last year or the year before.
No, it was last year because I was on the list too that I was seeing.
Yeah. And she's just such a beloved person. And I think there probably was some pressure to maybe, or at least a discussion of updating the story to present day, but they kept it in the 70s. And I think that was important, right?
I think so, because it's before the internet, you know, like it's kind of a different story, I think, now if you tell it now. But I don't have kids, so I can't be sure. Thank God.
And it's as much about religious identity as it is about puberty too, right? Or at least the book is.
I don't know if it's as much about it, but yeah, they definitely affect each other in the story. Yeah.
So number six, I have Poor Things.
Oh wait, I just said my number six.
Yes. Poor Things. Heard of it?
Loved it.
Okay. You want to talk about it in a little bit?
I don't care.
Okay. We'll table that.
Okay.
You did number six?
Yeah.
Number five, I have May December, which we covered.
I have Past Lives.
Past Lives. Okay. Let's table that.
Okay.
Number four, I have Killers of the Flower Moon.
And I have Anatomy of a Fall, which we already talked about. So go ahead. I'm going to go take a break. You talk about Killers of the Flower Moon.
Don't leave me.
No, go ahead.
So yeah, it's 3.5 hours. It's
too long.
It's Marty Scorsese.
Too much.
I saw it in the theater. I'm so glad I did. Yeah. Like, the performances are just incredible. It's just, it's not just Scorsese. This is also a really sad story.
Yeah. And I am familiar with the story
So the Osage Indians, like, were per capita, like, the richest people that have ever existed on Earth, for a while, because they had an oil boom. And so it's just like a fascinating take on class and race in America, but it is the quintessential, you know,
colonization
and genocidal American story,
right?
Which kind of Robert De Niro's character epitomizes that. But I don't know. I think Marty has a few more movies planned, but if this is how he's going out, and I think a lot of people were, you know, kind of processing it as maybe as like a valedictory to his career.
Yeah.
It's a good one. And he has a cameo in it.
Yeah. You told me about that.
Which a lot of
people hate.
Really hate. It was note perfect for me. Like, it made me rethink the movie in a whole new context. The little coda, scene at the end. I thought it was just the perfect note to end on of his kind of ambivalence of being the one to tell this story. I respected the movie a lot. It feels like now it's probably, other than Lily Gladstone, it may not win anything at the Oscars. And even she is not a sure thing.
Yeah.
So it feels like it's gotten like a little bit of a backlash maybe, or a little bit of apathy from people. So we'll see how it does at the awards.
Well, I really have to say, the reason I didn't see this, there are two reasons. But one of them is because I don't want to see a Martin Scorsese movie again.
Sure.
And I think he's actually very funny in the TikToks that his daughter posts of him. I actually really enjoy Martin Scorsese.
I've never seen any of these, but I keep reading about them. And I guess he's
very funny.
He's finding a new audience.
And that's super fun. And I also am, you know, from day to day, I kind of like change my opinion on who should be able to tell what stories. I think it's, you know, hard to say somebody can't tell a story, especially if they have the power to get it made, which he obviously does. But I just, and I do educate myself about these things in other, you know, media and other contexts. So it's not that I'm avoiding witnessing what they're exploring or the story that he's telling, but I just don't know that I need to hear it from his point of view. Not that it's his point of view, but like his lens, I guess, his storytelling, his auteur, mm-hmm. Bishop. I just made that word up.
Auteur,
Bishop. I just don't know. I also am sick of Leonardo DiCaprio. There's just some people I'm sick of watching.
Wow.
I'm sorry. I like Leo a lot in a lot of things, but I don't need to see him in a movie every year. I don't.
He doesn't even make a movie every year.
It feels like it. I feel like I just watched him in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and I thought he was great. I think I might have even had him as one of my favorite performances. Was that like 5 years ago? I don't know.
What about Don't Look Up? Didn't you love him in that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's what I mean. Like, I don't need to – I don't know. He's just in a lot of stuff. Also, that clip of him with his teeth. I can't stand those teeth.
The teeth he's wearing in the movie.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Fair enough.
Sorry. That's where I'm at with it all. I'm just being honest. I don't want to see it.
Okay. Number three for you?
Bottoms.
Bottoms. Okay. I don't have Bottoms on my list.
You don't?
No.
It's number three.
Tell me about it.
I rewatched part of it the other night just to make sure. Bottoms is a hilarious romp about two teenage girls who want to have sex. So they consider themselves, and this is their word, these are their words, not mine, they consider themselves ugly and nerds. And so they're afraid they can't get any pussy. So they start a fight club to make themselves seem awesome and to earn the respect of the hot girls in school, which they do. And I won't say whether or not they end up sleeping with anyone, but it's a really funny, silly, broad comedy.
Yeah, I had it number 12 for the year, so it did just kind of miss my top 10.
I don't think I laughed harder at anything this year.
We saw this at Alamo. We laughed our asses off. It's Rachel Sennett and Io Edebiri are the leads in it. And I think in my Letterboxd review of this, I'm like, these two are stars and they know it. You know, so it felt like a return to kind of like the raunchy, like male-driven comedies of the 80s, like a little bit. Like it's a buddy, gross-out comedy.
Yeah.
And so for two young women to be leading that, you know, felt kind of revolutionary.
And not to like overuse an overused word, but it's very progressive, you know, and it like takes certain tropes and flips them on their head. Like they're not nerds because they're gay. Like one of the most popular kids in school is gay and everybody knows it and loves him. It's because, you know, they're nerds or whatever, you know? So it feels very modern. It feels very inclusive and it kind of takes like those 80s tropes, but like puts them into today in a fun way. And I love watching people fall just in general. Like slapstick humor.
Sure. That's your thing.
And they beat the shit out of each other in this movie. And it is so, but it's so over the top. It's not serious. It's not, you know, it's not like dramatic and gross. It's like, they, you know, she punches her and she breaks her nose and it's awesome. It's just great.
It definitely, by the end, like goes to some crazy places that I wasn't sure that I totally bought.
You don't have to, though, because it's a ridiculous comedy, right? Like it sets the tone right away for me.
Yeah.
And then it heightens that tone. And it gets in some like jokes that I don't know that a lot. Like there, I think there's a rape joke. Like there's some serious, they take some big swings. It's really ballsy. It's in the same way that we were kind of talking about Saltburn, like being provocative. Bottoms is very provocative, but I think it's more successful because the tone is more consistent.
Yeah. Also former All-Pro NFL running back Marshawn Lynch, steals the movie as so
the whole time.
As the teacher.
I had no idea who this guy was because I don't watch football, but I loved him. I thought he was so funny.
Yeah.
I thought he did a great job.
So that was your number three?
That was my number three. What was your number three?
My number three is American Fiction.
Nice.
Is that your number two?
That's my number two.
Okay. Let's talk about it.
Great. Let's talk about it.
Saw this at Alamo also.
Yeah. I love this movie. I want to watch it again. Yeah, just it's probably the best satire I've seen in a long time.
So well done, and it like just threads a needle that felt very difficult to do, to make a satirical movie about race in 2023. And so for the duration of it, there's kind of like two movies kind of existing side by side in it, which is this kind of like fairly grounded family drama that's going on with Jeffrey Wright's character and his brother, Sterling K. Brown, his new girlfriend, his sister, his mother, who needs a lot of assistance. And then this more satirical movie about him being a professor who's writing these very kind of academic books inspired by Greek mythology that aren't getting any heat, and he's getting filed in black literature in the bookstores, and he's upset about that. So he writes what he considers to be a black book that would sell, which is way more ghetto. So that movie is kind of broader.
Ghetto, quote unquote, the word that he uses. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah.
So that movie is a little broader, and I wasn't sure if that was totally working totally with the more grounded family drama stuff. And then it kind of loops around at the end, and it just had an ending that to me like totally connected anything, made everything work, made everything justified. And this was my vote for the SAG Awards, because I am a SAG voter.
I am too, and I didn't vote because I forgot again.
But for Ensemble of the Year, to me, this was easily the best acting ensemble work of the year.
Yeah, it's great. It's interesting to, you know, watch a movie as a white woman, and like, specifically I'm talking about his character having these strong feelings about not wanting to be considered a quote unquote black writer, you know? And so watching how they explored that idea, which is something that I never really thought about, right? Cause why would I? Cause that's not my life experience necessarily. So I think it's like truly, it's like an empathetic movie. It like puts you in his place. Not that I can ever really understand, but they just like revealed his situation and his opinion and all this stuff in such an interesting, funny way that like I could sympathize. I shouldn't say empathize, but I could sympathize with what he was kind of going through. And it made me think about things that I never think about. And I love movies like that where, you know, you truly are like walking in somebody else's shoes for a couple hours and you're experiencing a different walk of life.
And Issa Rae is like the more successful black writer that he's trying to like kind of like emulate like what she's doing with her career. And then they have this conversation toward the end of the movie where you're like
– confrontation, really.
A confrontation, but you're like, they're both right. And they're both making good points. And for like a satirical movie to be that smart and like there's no heroes or villains here and there's, you know, gray areas in both points of view – there, like that was a really well-written scene, I thought.
And there's also a lot of surprises. There's something that happens, I won't give it away, probably 20 minutes into the movie. That immediately you're like, oh my gosh. And you're kind of sucked in to the whole situation. And it just like, it was like a train for me after that. Like it just kept going and it was a ride. I enjoyed it. I laughed a lot. I cried a lot. Like I loved it. Like, again, like you asked me next week, I could say this was my number one. I keep going back and forth between this and the one that I have as number one.
And Cord Jefferson is the writer-director. Yes. So I'm excited to see more from him.
Who's mostly like a TV writer, as I understand. Yeah.
He wrote for Watchmen.
Right, right.
So my number two is Oppenheimer.
Okay.
So
what could be your number one be then?
So you're reserving space for Oppenheimer in your top 10 when you get around to seeing it, right?
Sure, sure. No, I've heard it's fantastic. I will probably end up seeing this one. I'm sick of Chris Nolan too.
Wow. Okay.
I'm so sick of it.
Isn't he doing another
Batman movie? I don't give a fuck.
He's
about
done with Batman.
Why are they? They're doing like a Lady Gaga.
What is that?
Lady Gaga, right? Isn't she in a new Batman movie?
That Christopher Nolan is making? Maybe I thought not. He was done with Batman.
He's probably done with it. No. I can't keep track of everything.
Okay.
He ruined Batman, though. It's so weird.
He did not ruin Batman. You don't like The Dark Knight?
No, it's too dark.
You're looking for the Twilight Knight.
I don't know. Inception was good. What else has he done?
The Prestige, a Craigslist movie that we're going to be covering.
Oh, yeah, that was good, yeah.
What about Memento?
Well, yeah, but that was like his first movie. That's a great movie.
Yeah.
But that was when he didn't have any money. And he
Dunkirk, Carla. What about Dunkirk?
Did I see Dunkirk?
You did not see
Dunkirk. I was like, I can't sit through another Christopher Nolan movie.
And that has Kenneth Branagh in it.
I love him.
So this also has Kenneth Branagh
in it. So you know that I must like really not want to see it if Kenneth Branagh's in it, and I'm not gonna.
So Oppenheimer just covers like a really important and interesting period in American history. He's a fascinating lead character. Cillian Murphy is incredible in the lead role. And it just has like a propulsive feeling like all throughout. Like it's 2.5, maybe longer hours, but I won't say it flew by, but I'd say it felt riveting like the whole way through. And the money shot of the bomb being tested, like, yeah. Like incredible special effects as well. Like, a cast of dozens of great actors who all pop, you know, even in really small roles. I'm excited to see it again. And I think it's almost definitely going to win Best Picture. Like it's the front runner by a pretty wide margin. So I think it's going to be a deserving winner.
Cool.
So that means your number one is...
Wait, what could your number one be, though?
We tabled it. Poor Things.
Oh, is Past Lives your number one?
My number one is Past Lives.
What?
And your number one is Poor Things.
Your number one is Past Lives? Wait, I liked it more than you.
Well, why'd you have it at... What'd you have it at?
Like much, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I hit it at 5.
Okay. And I had Poor Things at number 6. So we both liked both of these movies.
I didn't know Past Lives was your favorite movie of the year. I would have said Oppenheimer or Killer of the Flower Moon.
Well, you know, I contain multitudes.
I'm shocked. I'm not even doing an act right now. Y'all listening.
Okay. So.
Really?
Past Lives, I think, just hit a real sweet spot for me. And even talking about Oppenheimer, I have to admit, like, 2.5-hour movie, like, big swings, like, big epic, like.
I'm shocked. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I cannot believe that Past Lives is your number one.
Maybe I just didn't have a visceral enough reaction in the,
I guess not.
In the room.
Keep going, sorry.
And so, to me, there's a difference between, like, an epic movie like Oppenheimer. You know it's going to be an interesting subject, but there can be scenes that maybe don't quite work. There can be actors who are maybe not as good as other people in it or whatever. There's going to be, you know, you're throwing everything at the wall a little bit. And you have to get a lot right, but also like you're a little more forgiven if you get things wrong. Mm-hmm. A movie that it's as small and personal and intimate as Past Lives. So if you haven't seen it, it's Greta Lee plays – a woman who grows up in South Korea. She moves when she's about 12. And she has this, childhood friend that they were kind of like a little sweet on each other. And then they reconnect years later on social media and they start to kind of like develop a flirtation, and get a little closer, online. She's lived in Canada and New York and she's like her link to her old life in Korea. And then he comes and visits her and she's married. And so it's just like this very small story. I just, you know, the rule of threes thing for me, it's like, it's three periods in her life. She's like 11, 22, and 33, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just three, it's a love triangle. It's these three characters and the three lead actors are just note perfect in it. And it's, the writer director is Celine Song. It's her first movie. She's a playwright.
Yeah.
Who I think, it closely resembles her biographical details. I just thought it was like super well observed, like moody and beautiful and deep and, like, it's got kind of like a Lost in Translation vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And movies like that, Big Night, I think is another movie. That's a little bigger, but it's still like an indie that's telling like a more intimate story. And like, this is one that I'm going to look forward to coming back to, over the years.
Yeah. I'm surprised, but not disappointed. I loved it. Yeah, I thought it was fantastic. I was so moved and sobbed like for a couple hours afterwards, you know, I mean, intermittently. And then the next day I was driving somewhere and I started thinking about it and I started crying again in my car. I think I came home and told you that. I was like, I'm sorry, my eyes are red. I've just been crying about the movie we watched last night. I don't want to give anything away, but I might. So fast forward maybe. But that ending moment is so moving and relatable. Again, like I can't fully relate to her experience being an immigrant and being younger, you know. But certainly I've had those feelings. Like I have a friend who I've been friends with since I was a little girl. And my friend Matt, who you've met many times.
Yeah.
And we never had like a sexual relationship or anything like that. We didn't even have a romantic relationship, but I loved him dearly. And there was always part of me that thought like, well, if we had like gotten older together, we might have ended up together, you know? And I feel that way about ex-boyfriends too, you know, like we just weren't really at the right place at the right time to be together. And I wouldn't give up what you and I have for those things, but they're just different paths. But like, you know, talking like adults about it, like they're different paths. And I know you have past relationships too, where it's like, it wasn't that you didn't care about that person or didn't love that person or couldn't have like been happy with that person. It just like didn't work out at that time because of life circumstance. And like, we are where we are now and it works for me, you know, but like there are those other paths that any one of us could have taken.
And that's explicitly a theme in this movie.
Explicitly, yes.
Yeah.
And her husband, is so – the guy who plays – what's the actor's name?
John McGarrow.
I think he's so like – I mean the two leads are amazing, but he's also really fantastic. And especially the way that his character is written is so relatable and so also just like heartbreakingly beautiful because we've like – we're conditioned in this society to like, you know, since you're a little kid of like the fairy tale and your soulmate and like all those things. But I just don't think that that there's only one soulmate or that, you know.
Yeah. Are you sure this wasn't your number one movie of the year?
It was really great. I wish we had seen it in the theater.
Yeah.
We saw it at home. I think that affected the overall experience. There was parts in the beginning when they were talking
you were like,
computers.
Get on with it already.
Yeah, on their computers. I was like, okay, we get it. You know, there was part of me that was kind of antsy to like understand what this was about more, you know?
Yeah.
It's a slow burn for sure.
But it's no salt burn. I mean, this is a little early, but I could see this being a Craigslist movie maybe in the future as I come back to it.
I'm really surprised. I thought Oppenheimer was yours.
It was close, but I went for Past Lives.
How long have we gone now?
We're about an hour in.
Oh, okay. We'll speed it up, everybody. Everybody's like, yeah, they come back once a year and then they're on for 3 hours.
Everybody's like, just get on with it. So okay. Tell me why Poor Things is your number one movie of the year.
Well, it's the only movie I've seen twice full on in the movie theater. And for as long as I can remember, I can't remember the last time I saw one movie twice in the movie theater.
And they were both screenings or one of them you paid
for? Yeah, no, they were both screenings. Yeah.
But you liked it even more the second time.
I did. Well, I really wanted to, I went with a friend the first time and I really wanted to go with you the second time. And so that, you know, opportunity presented itself. But, this movie is just so thematically, it's kind of like what I'm experiencing in my life right now, which is why I think it resonated with me so much, which is this idea of like good or bad, you're alive and like fully experience life, even if it's painful, you know, and to like, as I get older, it's something that I'm thinking about a lot, which is like, yeah, this is, you know, whatever situation is that feels like it sucks. Like, yes, this sucks for whatever reason, but it's much better than not being conscious, you know, even in those moments of like real pain or whatever, and trying to remind myself of like, that's part of living too. You know, it's not just the highs. This all sounds kind of trite. I'm like repeating it, but
not at all.
For me, this movie explores that theme and it's just something that I think I'm personally exploring myself in my life. And it kind of just, the movie just hit me at the right time. So for me, that just elevated it beyond anything else this year.
And great performances overall, but it's really dependent on Emma Stone.
Yeah. I mean, and I like Emma Stone. I've always liked Emma Stone. I love Easy A. I think maybe her best performance is, or one of them is Easy A, you know, like, so I've always enjoyed her, but I didn't really care about, what was it called? La La Land or whatever. It was fine.
Sure.
I didn't dislike it, but I think she's just pretty phenomenal in this in terms of like,
The physicality
that she does, the voice, and yeah, just like the whole way that she moves through physically through the piece is like super specific and technical and interesting.
It's sex positive.
Yeah. I know we had this discussion where some people that we know felt like it was
male gaze,
male gaze and like male, whatever, toxic or whatever. Because she has sex in it at a brothel, like she's a sex worker in it. She's a prostitute for the second time I watched it, I was like, oh, she's in this, this is like a much longer part of the movie than I remembered. But that to me was more about her treating life like an experiment and sex as an experiment and, you know, experiencing the things that are kind of darker. Because that's part of life. Like, that's what that meant to me. It didn't mean we just get to see Emma Stone's boobs or whatever. That's how I felt about it.
And great performances by the whole cast.
Yes.
And it's Yorgos Lanthimos, the eccentric Greek director.
Yeah.
Who did The Favorite and The Lobster. And probably the production design of the year.
Oh, it's so fun to watch. I just, like, loved the costumes. I could just, like, I could watch it with the sound off. You know, like that's how it's eye candy for me. It's just really fun.
Cool. So we had about like half of them overlapped, but we got to talk about some other stuff as well. And then I shocked you with my number one
movie. I'm shocked.
Movie.
I'm shook and shocked.
Let's see if we can do the same with performances. So
okay. I have 12. I have to get rid of two. Hold on.
You don't have to get rid of any because okay. I'll bring up one that's an honorable mention because I did my list and then I saw a movie and I'm like, ooh.
Okay.
I wish I had put him on the list. So the movie is Perfect Days.
Okay.
And it's a Japanese movie directed by Wim Wenders, the German director who did Wings of Desire.
Uh-huh.
It's Koji Yakusho. Is the lead actor. So he's a Japanese man in his 70s, probably. He was the lead in the movie Shall We Dance? I don't know if you ever saw that.
I did, yeah.
Years ago. He's so great in that. They remade it with J-Lo,
version. Yes,
but
the
original Japanese version, like.
No, I saw the original one, yeah.
I've probably seen him in a couple other things since then, but he gave a beautiful performance in that. So he's just a guy who cleans toilets in Tokyo, and you follow him around. And he barely talks and he lives like this Spartan existence, like just sleeping on a futon in this little place. And like you see his morning routine every day. He waters his plants. Aww. He gets his coffee. He drives to clean the toilets, you know, and then you start to discover stuff about him over the course of the movie. And you didn't see the movie Another Round, right? The Danish movie with Mads Mikkelsen that he was nominated for.
No.
So that's a movie where, you know, it's all these Danish middle-aged guys that make a pact to like drink like they drank when they were 20 again.
Oh, funny.
And it's like an interesting movie, but then like there's the end of the movie, Mads Mikkelsen does this whole dance sequence that it's totally why he got nominated and like elevated it from like kind of like maybe a B movie to an A-, you know, just, and this has a similar thing. Where the last like 3 or 4 minutes are just like one shot of this guy driving in his truck and he's laughing and he's crying and you're experiencing all the emotions of the movie with him. And it's just a gorgeous place to go out. So I just wanted to call out Koji Yakusho.
Since I have 12, I will do two honorable mentions of performances that aren't like number 11 and 12, but that we've already talked about them.
Okay.
Emma Stone.
Okay.
So again, I'm not ranking my top 10.
Okay.
We just talked about Emma Stone's performance.
Great.
And why I liked it.
Great.
And then
she's got to be in there.
Jeffrey Wright.
Okay.
Which we talked about it from American Fiction.
Okay, great.
Okay, so there you go.
So now let's get into our top 10.
So those are clearly two of my favorite performances of the year.
Okay.
We've already talked about it.
So I have 10 ranked performances. Carla also has 10 performances that she'd like to also talk about.
Besides Emma Stone and Jeffrey Wright.
Okay, who are obvious.
Who are obvious.
And I should say, I guess, that my top two performances were Emma Stone and Jeffrey Wright. So
oh, they are. Okay.
They're my number one and number two.
Okay.
So. But you don't know the order.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Okay. My number 10 performance of the year is a movie we have not talked about, Jodie Foster in Naiad.
I have her on my list too.
Okay. Why was Naiad any good, first of all? And
you liked Naiad better than I did, I think.
I don't know.
Okay.
It's okay.
Yes.
As a movie. It's not particularly well made. It's Slate Culture Gab Fest that we listened to eviscerated this movie.
It, right.
And we're kind of talking about how it's like the worst kind of like, I want an Oscar, you know, for middle-aged actresses, but are Annette Bening and Jodie Foster incredible?
Yeah.
And I thought they were incredible, but particularly Jodie Foster. And this is maybe also tied into just watching True Detective.
I forgot the name, sir.
True Detective Baked
Craig
Alaska or whatever. I was hoping you would come up with
the – I almost said Fargo.
Fargo. Also Fargo. Watching John Hamm in Fargo made me love Jodie Foster and Naiad more. No, she was in True Detective Baked Alaska or whatever that was called.
I loved True Detective this year. Craig was on the fence.
It
doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
If it was not Jodie Foster, I would not have watched it.
I really liked it.
But why is she so great in Naiad?
I think she just grounds everything. So I think like Jodie Foster, who doesn't like Jodie Foster, right? Like, come on. I've always liked Jodie Foster, but something about her two performances this year in Naiad and True Detective, I was like, oh yeah, she might be the greatest living actress.
Mm.
She's so real. And you know, I love Meryl Streep. I love her, but she plays characters, you know.
So does Annette Bening.
And so does Annette Bening. Exactly. I love Annette Bening. They play characters and that's great. And they're both fantastic at it. Jodie Foster is like your sister. She's like your mom. She's like your girlfriend. She's like your neighbor. Like she could be in any one of our lives in any character that she plays.
Years ago, I had a dream that Jodie Foster was my cousin. And I woke up and I was so fucking bummed that she was not actually my cousin. Like, wouldn't she be the best cousin?
Yes. That's what I mean. Like you just see her in your life. She's just so real. I think this is something that I've recently come to, even though I've spent years loving Jodie Foster, I think she might be our greatest living actress. It depends how you define great actress, I suppose, how you define it. But if it is just being relatable and, I mean, relatable, I guess that's how I'm defining it. She's relatable.
So like Annette Bening has to do that. She's doing a voice. She's like, disguise her appearance a little bit. Like she obviously had to train and train and train to play Diana Naiad in it. But yeah, Jodie Foster is just there to ground the whole movie. Mm-hmm. And just the specificity of the relationship I thought was interesting too. So
it's
like,
very cool. Yeah.
They're two middle-aged gay women who like they had maybe had a thing fling briefly, but like it didn't take.
And they're now just best friends.
They're just best friends. And she's just doing this to support her friend the whole way. And that's what's so moving about it.
Yeah.
Like,
well, and I think it also speaks to something about being of a certain age where it's like, oh, I've already had sex with people. I've already been in love with people. I've already like, you know, and that you do have these kind of core relationships in your life as you get older that are more important than any of those other things. And I think this is a great example, this relationship that they have in the movie, of that kind of relationship.
And all those critics who were eviscerating this movie on Slate were admitting that they cried at the end of Naiad and they were so mad about it. You cried because of Jodie Foster.
Yeah.
Like, she's the one who makes you care.
Yeah. Cause she just so wants her to succeed.
Yeah.
It's such a selfless love, you know, for a friend. Like I feel that way about my best friend. Like I would do that for her, you know, if I had enough money.
If she wanted to swim from Cuba to Key West.
If she was funding it, I'd be there in a heartbeat, you know. Like, there's just some people who are your family, even if they're not born of your family. And this, I felt like that movie was about that.
Great.
But it kind of felt like a music video at some points.
It was not well directed.
It wasn't well directed.
It's by the Free Solo people, which was why it was so disappointing because they made such a great sports documentary.
Yeah.
There. Okay, so I'm glad we both had Jodie Foster.
Yeah.
Who's somebody from your list?
This is somebody we talked about, but I played coy because I wanted to save it. It was Jimmy Tatro, I think is how you say his name.
Oh, from theater camp.
From theater camp.
Jimmy Tatro. Okay. Yeah, I'm going to watch for this kid in more movies because he made me laugh.
Like 4 or 5 years ago when I was living in Portland, I watched American Vandal and I just laughed so hard. He's in American Vandal and he's the guy that – so American Vandal, it doesn't matter. You can look it up on Netflix. But he plays like the guy they think drew the dicks all over the teacher's cars. But he's such a bro that you're like, oh, this guy must be an idiot. But he's just a good actor, you know? Yeah. So like in theater camp, I laughed until I cried at some of his scenes. I was laughing so hard. I just think he's so funny and fun and just like a joy to watch. And yeah.
So it's his mom's camp and she has a stroke and he has to take over for her. And he could not be like a worse fit for like the queer and inclusive and, you know, nerdy, you know, geeky theater kids.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of like the tension of the movie.
But it's the heart of the movie because he's the – I mean, I know that the two leads like have their moment of change, but that's more about their relationship. And his character actually changes.
Yeah.
I guess the others do. I don't know. But yeah, he's the lead.
And he made it believable too and made me laugh. Great. Number 9, I have somebody from Poor Things. It's Mark Ruffalo.
Mark Ruffalo. He's on my list too.
Okay. Is this the greatest Mark Ruffalo performance?
This is. I always like him. He's always good. Like, there's never been a Mark Ruffalo movie where I was like, I did not like Mark Ruffalo. But he's also not somebody who's like super pops for me in anything where I'm like, that movie was made by Mark Ruffalo. I know he's a good actor, you know. But I think his performance in this is fantastic.
Next level.
So fun. He's very fun. He like really lets his freak flag fly and like has a great time.
I mean, talk about laughs. Like, he made me laugh. And the timing of this movie is so well done. The comedy is so well handled because they allow characters like they give this to Rami Youssef also like good slow burn moments where they stay on an actor for their reactions longer than you would normally expect.
Yes.
And so much about modern directing for comedy, like often, like I feel like the moment could have been funny, but like the camera wasn't on the right person or they cut away too fast or whatever. And this movie like handled the comedy so right. And so much of it is just on Mark Ruffalo reacting to Emma Stone and like his silent moments are I mean, he's great with the dialogue too, but like he gets so much out of just a look in this.
He's totally enchanted by her, even when he's furious with her. And it's a really funny conflict to watch him try to work out in the character.
And as a satirical take on like men and the way they see themselves in a sexual relationship.
Yeah.
And how she continually is poking at his sense of himself throughout. Like it's a performance that's going to hold up really well for a long, long time.
I mean, I didn't see Oppenheimer, so apparently Robert Downey Jr. is going to win. But I thought Mark Ruffalo was the best supporting actor to me this year. I have so much more. Now, you just opened a whole other thought box about poor things.
Let's get in that thought box.
Well, I was just going to say the first time that I saw it, I was so nervous the whole time for her. I thought that they were going to do something, the director and writer were going to do something awful, like make her pay for her actions.
Yeah.
And how wonderful that they didn't. They just like let her do the quote unquote dangerous things that we see in so many other films or, you know, in real life. And and have some sort of fallout from, but they just kind of, yeah. Anyways, his character was a big part of that. Like, at first you're like, oh no, he's going to like abuse her or something. And I think that tension's important, but how fun is it to realize like, oh no, he's like, he's not going to win in this battle with her. Like, she's always going to be, you know, top of the barrel.
And that's why I think you said you enjoyed it more the second time around, because you weren't worried for her, because yes. You know how the movie turns out.
Even though I think that tension is so important to making the movie work. And it's like, goes along with this theme of like how we view women and women, how they need to behave and stuff. Like, it's a really important tension, but I really enjoyed it the second time because I knew she was going to be okay.
Yeah. So number 8, I have Robert De Niro in Killers of the Flower Moon.
I don't know who that is.
He is a middle-aged character actor.
Oh, so many of them.
This is one of the best De Niro performances, and especially
I can't.
Especially for old De Niro, where like he definitely hit a wall at some point where he was doing some movies for the paycheck and like he seemed checked out, you know.
I know we've had this conversation on Craigslist before, for sure.
I'm sure we have. Yeah. You know, he's done some Fockers and some Analyze Thises and
which were fun.
Stuff like that. But like, this is the real deal. Like, he is fucking scary in this.
Yeah.
And he's scary by being so low key. Like, he's just the epitome of the American, like, white male upper class, just like taking what he thinks is his due, you know, and stopping at nothing. So like, there's like a sociopathy to it, but like, it's a very low key, like calm performance, but he's the mastermind behind this whole killing scheme. Like, it's a great, great performance.
All right. I don't have him on my list.
Oh, too bad. Who do you have?
I do have, we'll just go in how I wrote them down. Rachel Sennott? Is that how you say her name? Sennott?
I think so.
From Bottoms.
Okay.
Io's obviously amazing and is amazing in everything. But I think Rachel maybe made me laugh the hardest in that movie.
So she was in the lead in a movie called Shiva Baby, which we have not seen, which like got like well reviewed, and I've had it on my list for a while. And
she also was in another one this year that's supposed to be really good. Anyways, we can talk about this off mic.
Bodies, Bodies, Bodies.
No,
I saw that. Like, I've seen her in a couple things, but like,
I used to be funny.
Okay,
that's supposed to be really good.
I don't know that, but she really popped in this.
She did, and I think it's. Like you were saying, they both are stars and they know that they're stars, or like they at least have the confidence of two stars. I don't know if they know they're stars. Like, I don't know them personally, but obviously, but they're so confident. And I felt like both of them in this movie, but because I didn't know her, I had seen Io and other things, obviously, but, they're both so funny in this, but I think Rachel specifically, because I don't know her work. I'd never seen her in anything. She surprised me and made me laugh a lot.
I think, you know, comedy really works on confidence and your confidence in the performers, like being confident in their personas in it. And that's why I thought like there wasn't even really any world building or explanatory stuff of who they're going to be. It kind of like started in the middle of just like, hey, these two are the leads. Just in the same way, if it was like Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi, you'd just be like, yep, it's them and they're going to do their thing. And the movie is just confident enough to just kind of put them out there in that way. And it you get it right away. You always love the gung-ho energy from people in comedy. Like, that's something that always makes you laugh.
When they're doing something dumb, but they're like, yes, we're going to do this just so we can hook up with the hot ladies or whatever. It is so funny to me.
This is something I tell my improv students, like, the characters don't need to know what the writers know.
Yeah.
And so, like, this is really, you know, inside baseball for improv comedy, but like, there, you know, improvisers have been trained to like call out the game and stuff. And so you get a lot of characters like trying to hash things out and problem solve and talk about things when really we just want to see the dumb person doing the dumb thing over and over without realizing they're being dumb and thinking they're being smart, you know?
Yeah. And then at the end, her character has a great like understanding of, she's changed. She grows.
So number seven, I have Greta Lee for Past Lives, my movie of the year.
I have Greta Lee on my list too.
Okay. Do you have any of the other Past Lives actors?
I have Teo. Is that his name? Teo, yeah. You? Yeah. Even though I also really enjoyed the husband.
So John Magaro is the American actor who plays the husband. Teo Yu is the Korean best friend. And yeah, I only have Greta Lee on my list. I really could have included any of the three of them. But and we won't spoil what the ending is, but like I felt like the need of the movie is for the character to kind of like keep it very close to the vest mm-hmm. and withdrawn throughout of like she's in this love triangle, you know, she's married, but she has this, you know, deep connection to this old friend and you don't really know how she's really feeling about anything. And then the emotions get released at the very end of the movie and it's just devastating and beautiful. And, and Carla is breaking down, but like,
it's
that's why. And
yeah,
I mostly just knew her from Russian Doll where she is very yeah. funny, but like,
very mannered in Russian Doll. Like a totally more of like a character-y part for sure in Russian Doll.
Yeah. But she really like revealed like so much depth in this movie. A very difficult role, I think.
Yeah. And just her. Oh, there's just so much going on there that I can't totally relate to because I haven't had that life experience, you know, of having come from a completely different country where you speak a different language and there's different culture, you know, but she does such a nice job of like kind of revealing that confusion, even though her character is trying to sound confident, you know?
Yeah.
It's really, but I also have, so I'll just say I have Teo Yu. And
he's just as good.
He's just as good, at, but in a different way because he is, you know, from Korea. He comes to visit her. And for me, what really sells it, I'm sorry to give this away, but there's a scene with all three of them at the bar. And then she gets up to go to the restroom and he's just talking to the husband. And it's like so, awful and awkward. And yet he's being so kind. They're both trying to be so polite. And you just know, like, and it's not personal. It's not about like you're her husband or you're her old friend. You know, it's about like this weird masculine, just it could have been anybody, you yeah. know? And I think that he does such a great job in that scene of like expressing, and it's in the writing too, of like, hey, this is weird, you know?
There's no heroes or villains here. Like we're not rooting for any particular outcome.
No.
We just care about these people.
Yeah.
And, but then all like the South Korea scenes too are great. Like him and his drinking buddies.
Oh my God. So it, fun. Yeah.
It's so funny.
It's and, so, that's very relatable, right? Even though it's a different culture and language, it's like, yeah, I have my girls and we sit around and we make fun of each other and, you know, it's great.
And he just radiates decency.
Yeah.
Like he's just somebody you care about. Number six, I have Sandra Hüller.
Who's that?
Anatomy of a Fall.
Oh, I forgot to put her on here.
Would she have been? Would she have been in her top 10?
I really liked her a lot. I forgot her name, but I liked her. She's great.
She's Oscar nominated.
She could
as well.
Win, maybe. No,
I don't think so. But very happy that for this foreign film, like, and talk about difficult. Like, in addition to just the navigating the part, you know, she's a German actress who's pretty much only acting in French and English in this movie. So she's acting in two languages that are not her yeah. native language. And she's – and this movie, like Past Lives, is also about communication to a certain degree
right.
and language barriers also. And she's like definitely like a character that you don't totally like mm-hmm. either. Like she – because she's the lead, you're sympathetic to her and she's being put through something that she should not be put through, but she's kind of like an off-putting character and she is frequently being a jerk, you know?
Yeah.
And
she probably was a jerk to her husband.
And she was a jerk to her husband and like the key scene of the movie is like a fight that they had that they have audio of that they play in court and
yeah.
we finally see the husband alive for the first time in the movie and like, and that's a riveting scene. So yeah, really difficult performance. Glad to see her nominated.
Yeah. I am too, even though I forgot her name. But she's great.
Yeah.
What's it, Sandra?
Sandra Hüller.
She was also in a movie I would never see and that you did not like.
Oh. I was hoping to avoid talking about The Zone of Interest.
Because you know that so many film nerds love it.
Man, I missed the boat on Zone of Interest because it's the front runner for foreign film, nominee for director and for best picture. Normally, you know, hey, Holocaust film, artsy film.
You like, love it. You love it.
I think it would be so up my alley. I love Under the Skin, which was the director's last movie. Which you hated, but
only because it affected me to my core.
But also, like, I keep reading about, like, the sound design of Zone of Interest and how, like, sophisticated and cool it is. And I'm like, I saw it in the theater and, man, did I not experience that at all. Like,
really?
There were so many things, like, that I was supposed to have gotten that I didn't get somehow.
Where did you see it?
I saw it at the Vista.
Oh, I wonder if – I don't know. As soon as I read what that was about, I was like, that is not for me.
Yeah. So
I already know that people are apathetic. I don't need to experience it.
But the critics loved it and the film nerds are, you know.
I'm surprised that you didn't.
Hey, I'm all for like a difficult, you know, movie like this. I love that these kind of movies are getting Oscar nominations. I just didn't like this one.
Yeah.
And like, is she good in it? Yeah, but she doesn't really get to do a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I would also steer people to Toni Erdmann, which is a really weird 3-hour German comedy, from a few years ago. That was the first thing that I saw her in. And like that was a real star-making performance as well.
Cool.
Who else you got?
I have Abby Ryder Fortson from Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. She plays Margaret in it. And she's very sweet. And
I think I've seen her in stuff. Like she's worked a lot since she was a little kid, right?
Yeah, she was in some, she was on
Fargo, I think.
But she was on that great show that we loved that was canceled after 2 seasons with Melanie Lynskey.
Oh, yeah. She was the little girl in it then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So she's a teen.
What was the name of that?
It was also with Mark Duplass.
Yes, yes, yes.
And Amanda Peet. I'm looking it up.
That was such a great show. God, I wish I could remember the names of anything.
That was called Togetherness, Carla.
Togetherness. Yeah, I think she was in that. But no, she was – because it is kind of like – it does hinge on the performance of Margaret, the whole movie. And she's just very sweet and very – it's not even that she's likable because there's some scenes where she's completely unlikable, but she's just very accessible. Like you can just tell what she's feeling in every scene.
And Rachel McAdams is the mom?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got to see this.
The dad's really great too. I've never seen him in anything before, but he was super cute. Okay.
Number 5, I have Lily Gladstone.
I didn't see it.
Killers of the Flower Moon. She is probably going to win. Though I think it's a toss-up maybe between her and Emma Stone. Like, I could see it going either way. But
well,
I think
Emma Stone's already won, so.
She has won, so I think the opportunity to, you know, she's the first indigenous actress, American actress nominated for Best Actress in the category. So I think that's going to be an irresistible story, but also she's just amazing in it. Like, she's the heart of the movie. If De Niro is like the dark side of it, she is the light. And you have to believe that she and Leo would actually enter into this relationship. And she's funny in it. She's charismatic.
And she's never been in anything, right? They found her.
No, she's worked for a while. She's been in Kelly Reichert stuff, you know. And she was in this other movie that I watched this year, which was an indie, which was very similar to Nomadland, and I think it was better. And where she's just this
her performance was better?
No, I think it was a better movie than Nomadland, but it was
Nomadland.
It was a very similar thing where she's just this woman who's kind of it's called The Unknown Country. I think I saw it on Canopy.
Oh, okay.
Which, if you don't have Canopy, it links to your library account, and you can watch all sorts of great indies and foreign films, and for free. But yeah, recommend Lily Gladstone in Unknown Country. or in Certain Women, which is a Kelly Reichardt film from a few years ago. So watch out for her, Carla. She's going to be in more stuff, and she's great.
Good. I'm excited. I'd love to see her in anything else. I will go back and watch those other movies she has been in. Sterling K. Brown is my next one.
So good.
So good. Unlike anything I've ever seen him do before. I always like him a lot, obviously. He's a great actor.
Very versatile actor, too.
But yeah, he's so, like, unlikable and lovable and in everything, in like every scene, he has these great shifts in his personality. It feels their relationship feels so like my brother and I, you know, where it's just from moment to moment, we can either love each other or hate each other. But there's always like a deep bond. I love that he's in the last scene of the film with Jeffrey Wright.
Yeah.
It feels very like appropriate. I think he's part of the reason the movie works for sure.
And similarly, like from their very first scene together, I think it's also true of Tracy Ellis Ross, who plays their sister in it. Like just the work the actors have done to create just a believable relationship, yeah. and the writing too. But like when you know, like 30 seconds in of like, oh, I know exactly what this relationship is. I believe everything about it, you know, and then you get to see it develop. Like then you don't have to do any heavy lifting with the exposition or anything.
Yeah.
It's just lived in and it's totally real. And he gets a lot of the biggest laughs in the movie.
He does, yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
Number four, I have Charles Melton, my one actor from May, December.
Hey, I have Charles Melton on my list too. I only have two left. After Charles Melton, I only have one. I think maybe because you've said some of the ones that I had on my list.
Yes. I think that's the idea.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You've been crossing them off?
Yeah, I've been
okay.
crossing them off.
Great. Yeah, I did not know this actor at all. I guess he was in Riverdale, which I've never seen.
Which I have.
Okay. Did you remember him from that?
Yeah, but like not more than anybody else in that cast in Riverdale, you know?
So why was he so good in this?
Oh,
he's heartbreaking.
He's heartbreaking. It's a crime that he was not nominated, I think. Is it a crime? No, that's dramatic.
Is a huge missed opportunity.
I've had too much time on Mike. I'm getting dramatic. It's not a crime. It's just a missed opportunity. He's wonderful in this movie and definitely like the emotional pulse of it, I think.
Because both Julianne Moore and Natalie Portman are pretty awful people.
Well, they're, yeah, and they're very severe characters, right? So it's like they're both really interesting. But they're kind of like they're like the devil and the angel on your shoulders, right? And like, he's definitely, oh, and just the way that you kind of get wrapped up in his story in terms of like his emotional arc of like how he was just a kid and how he got like sucked into this thing that he wasn't ready for. And that scene where he gently confronts her and really just wants to have a conversation and she just shuts it down is so heartbreaking. And the scene on the roof with his son is so
That's what I was going to bring up. Yeah, when he's getting stoned with his son on the roof. Yeah.
And they're like not that far apart in age, you know.
Yeah.
It's upsetting. But also it happens, you know, so it's like, ugh. Yeah. It's not supposed to happen. But like you hear about these stories.
Come on, it happens.
You hear about these stories and you're just like, how is that even possible? And then you see this movie and you kind of can see like, oh yeah, he was just like, and I think, you know, for as much shit as we give teenage boys, like they probably are put in situations similar to teenage girls, you know, but they have to, because of like our culture, they're taught to respond to them in a different way because they have to be like the alpha male no matter what, you know?
Yeah.
It made me think about things I hadn't really thought about before.
We can enjoy the campier aspects of Natalie Portman and Julianne Moore in it, but he really is the heart of the movie and he gets us to care so much about he's the real victim in this and we care for him. So I'll go through mine because, we teased two of them. Number three, I have Robert Downey Jr. for Oppenheimer.
Yes.
I do not like Robert Downey Jr. as an actor, typically. Like, And like, even in seeing him accept his SAG award, I'm like, this guy's crazy.
You know? Yeah. Like, well, he just grew up in the business and he doesn't have a sense of reality.
He's full of himself, yeah. But he is so fucking good in this movie. Like, he also is heartbreaking.
What if we watched Oppenheimer and I was like, Craig, that was my favorite movie of the year. And we had to do 2 more hours of this.
Yes to all of that.
And you'd be like, and you would say my favorite movie is Past Lives, and I'd say my favorite movie is Oppenheimer.
It's not going to happen. Like, it's not going to happen.
It'd be like Opposites Day.
But he's really good in this. And then, yeah, I've got Jeffrey Wright number 2 and Emma Stone number 1.
Amazing. Like, yeah. Amazing. You and I had this similar. So who did you not have on your list that I have as the last spot on mine?
So we've mentioned all of them.
You looked down at my list, you cheater.
We've mentioned all of them but one?
I have one person left on my list.
And is it a movie that we talked about?
No.
Really?
It's not a movie we talked about.
Oh, my God. What else did you see? Something that didn't make your
top? Something huge.
Oh, my God.
Perhaps the biggest film of the year.
Taylor Swift's Eras Tour?
Close.
What was the biggest film of the year?
Really?
I don't know.
What was maybe the highest grossing movie of the year?
What was it?
Craig.
2023, the highest grossing movie
I think it was. I mean, I don't know. I don't pay
attention. It's not a superhero movie? Oh, Barbie.
Yes.
Okay, so you have Ryan Gosling.
I do.
Okay. Not Margot Robbie.
Well, she's great. Okay. I always think she's great.
Yeah.
But Ryan Gosling, like, is right. The best part of that movie, as far as I'm concerned.
I do not have Barbie in my top 25 for the year.
I don't either. And yeah. I didn't even see 25 movies.
Okay.
I'm not a fan. But.
But you're a fan of Ryan Gosling in this movie.
He's very funny in it. Like, and I actually think they're all very good in it. America Ferrera.
Sure.
Is great. She's always great. Margot Robbie. Robbie? Is it Robbie? Seriously, is it Robbie?
I think it's Robbie.
Robbie. Always great. But Ryan Gosling is, like, hilarious in the movie.
When they showed the clips at the SAG Awards, and I was like, if you knew nothing about any of these movies and were watching the clip to see who's doing the best acting, of, like, the clip they picked for Ryan Gosling as Ken was so funny. And he's so good at it. And he's having, like,
he's committing so much.
10 different emotions in a 15-second clip. Like, it was so good. Like, he's not going to win, but if he did, like, it would be so fun.
They should have a separate category of just Oscar clips. Who wins the best Oscar clip? Because I think that's something you don't really think about, is like, can you boil that performance down to 15 seconds and who gets across the like core of that character in 15 seconds, you know?
It's actually amazing, like, the backlash after the nominations came out for Margot Robbie being left off and Greta Gerwig being left off for director. When everyone walked out of Barbie saying that Ryan Gosling stole that movie.
Yes. Yes.
We were unanimous about it. And then it feels like, you nominate the guy but not the ladies that were behind it, you know?
Yeah.
This movie was about Ken.
I thought so. I mean, look, I love how much people loved it. I'm excited that people loved it. I think it's going to, like, shift, maybe. I don't know. Maybe it might shift how many female stories are told. And I think that's great. So I'm happy to reap all the benefits of the Barbie success. But that was not a great movie. It didn't make any sense to me. And if you're looking for a feminist film, there were several other this year that I thought were much more clear.
Poor Things.
Poor Things being one of
Bottoms.
Them. Yeah, yeah. But I don't want to take away people's joy about Barbie, you know. But I also don't like the whole thing of, like, well, so-and-so should have been nominated. And even when I'm saying, like, that about Charles Melton, it's like, but then you're taking a spot away from somebody else who deserves it too. Right. So it's
probably,
like,
Sterling K. Brown.
Exactly. Yeah. And, like, Sterling K. Brown is fantastic. And he was, I don't know, you pay attention to those polls or whatever. I don't really. Yeah. But he probably would have been the one who wouldn't have gotten it.
He was
right?
The most surprising.
Yeah. And he totally deserves it. Very deserving. And like, even all those directors, I mean, I totally want more female directors, but like, the director of Anatomy of a Fall was fantastic. I love Greta Gerwig. I love her movies, her other movies. But like, I don't know. Like, who cares?
She's a producer on the movie. The movie is nominated for Best Picture. Like, she's going to be fine.
She's fine. She's like set for the rest of her life. She can make anything she wants.
So we're recording this a week before the Oscars. So we're going to put it out maybe a few days before the Oscars.
We have to go through and edit some of it, I think.
Will you do that?
No, you will though.
Okay.
Right?
No, we're not editing this. We're putting it all out.
It's
warts,
very long.
Warts and all.
It's very long.
Warts and all. Last year's was a little shy of 2 hours. We're not quite that long this year.
Okay, good.
Okay. So real quick, let's do some Oscar picks.
Oh God, we still have this to do. Okay. I don't know. Go ahead.
So we're just going to do the big ones, which are the acting categories, director,
and this is
picture.
Who I think, not who I want.
You're going to do both.
Okay.
Who do you want? Who are you rooting for? And who do you think will win?
Okay, go ahead.
Actor in a leading role. You have Bradley Cooper for Maestro. We didn't even talk about that.
I fucking hated Maestro.
Coleman Domingo for Rustin. We didn't even talk about that.
I didn't see that.
Paul Giamatti in The Holdovers. Cillian Murphy for Oppenheimer. Jeffrey Wright in American Fiction.
I'm rooting for Jeffrey Wright. I think Cillian Murphy will win.
I think you were right on both counts.
That's how you feel too?
I also feel that Jeffrey Wright is my favorite. Cillian Murphy, I think, is going to win. Some people are saying Paul Giamatti could steal it. I don't think so. I think there's going to be a big Oppenheimer sweep this year. Actor in a supporting role, Sterling K. Brown, American Fiction, Robert De Niro, Killers of the Flower Moon, Robert Downey Jr., Oppenheimer, Ryan Gosling, Barbie, Mark Ruffalo, Poor Things. So it's going to be Robert Downey Jr. We can agree on that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it will be Robert Downey Jr.
You are rooting for?
I think it would be fun to see Ryan Gosling win. But I don't know. I loved Mark Ruffalo and I love Sterling K. Brown.
You had Brown, Ruffalo, and Gosling in your top 10. I had De Niro and Downey in my top 10.
Weird.
I am strangely rooting for Downey.
You are? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not rooting for anyone. I'll be happy whoever wins. It would even be cool to see Robert De Niro make a speech at this point in his life.
He's terrible giving speeches.
But so what? That would be funny.
Yeah. Actress in a leading role, Annette Bening, Naiad, Lily Gladstone, Killers of the Flower Moon, Sandra Hüller, Anatomy of a Fall, Carey Mulligan, Maestro,
no.
Emma Stone, Poor Things.
I'm rooting for Emma Stone, and I think Emma Stone will probably win. I could be wrong. It could be Lily Gladstone. I don't know.
Man, I really feel like it's a toss-up. I think I'm rooting for Lily Gladstone, although Emma Stone was my favorite performance of the year just because, you're rooting
for
the
story. She's already won.
You're rooting for the story also.
I know.
A little bit.
That's why the Oscars are stupid.
Yeah.
Who cares?
I'd be happy with either one. I think, remember when everyone was sure when they saved Chadwick Boseman for the last category of the year?
Yeah,
they were sure he was going to get it posthumously and it went to Anthony Hopkins,
And he wasn't even there, right?
He wasn't even there and it just kind of ended on that. And they had already given away Best Picture,
rough.
You know? I don't know. I feel like if Emma Stone wins, like there's going to be a backlash against her for taking it away from Lily Gladstone, Like it's
that's weird.
It is weird.
I don't know. I don't want to comment. I don't know.
Great.
Whoever wins is fine. It's great.
Actress in a supporting role, Emily Blunt. Her first nomination ever. Did you know that? You know that Emily Blunt had never been nominated for an Oscar?
That's shocking to me because she's great.
I think it's like 15 of 20 first-time nominees.
I just said Oscars are stupid.
Oscars are stupid. Emily Blunt, Oppenheimer. Danielle Brooks, The Color Purple.
Ugh. I did not like The Color Purple musical. I only watched half of it, though.
I watched the whole thing. It was not great.
I love the original movie. It's great.
America Ferrera, Barbie, Jodie Foster, Naiad, Divine, Joy Randolph, The Holdovers. Everyone is picking Divine Joy Randolph.
I think she will win, yeah.
I think she will win. I'd be happy with her or Jodie Foster winning.
Me too.
It's not going to be Jodie.
Who was the first one?
Emily Blunt, Danielle Brooks, America Ferrera.
Yeah, I don't care about this category.
Okay.
Even though I love Jodie Foster, I don't care. She's already won. Who cares?
Directing, you have Justine Triet's Anatomy of a Fall, Killers of the Flower Moon, Martin Scorsese, Oppenheimer, Christopher Nolan, Poor Things, Yorgos Lanthimos, The Zone of Interest, Jonathan Glazer. Everyone feels like it's going to be Chris Nolan's year.
Yeah, I think he's never won, right?
He's never won.
Yeah, he's going to win.
I would like him to win.
I don't care if he wins. Poor Things was my favorite movie. I want that guy to win.
Yorgos.
Yeah.
And picture. The nominees are American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie,
yeah.
The Holdovers,
yeah.
Killers of the Flower Moon,
yeah.
Maestro,
yeah.
Oppenheimer, Past Lives, Poor Things,
yeah.
The Zone of Interest.
I think Oppenheimer will win.
I think Oppenheimer will win. You would like to see...
I really don't. I don't know. Poor Things, I guess.
Past Lives.
I mean, that would be sweet. I'd be happy if Past Lives won.
Past Lives, I believe, is up for writing. I think that's its only realistic thing. That would be cool.
Is it weird that I don't feel passionate about any of those having to win this year?
I think we all just know that Oppenheimer's going to win.
Yeah,
and
I think that's probably it. Yeah. I'm just resigned to it. So, whatever.
It's like... The year that Roma was up for Best Picture, I wanted it to win so bad.
Yeah.
And then it went to Green Book.
Oh, that's right. Didn't it win Best Foreign Film or something, Roma?
It might have. He definitely won for Best Director.
I think it won Best Foreign as well.
It probably did. But yeah, and I obviously, as I said, I liked Oppenheimer a lot. I like Past Life slightly more. But
this is blowing me away. It's been an hour since you revealed that, and I'm still in shock.
We're still reeling from it. Carla, we got through.
We did it.
Our best of 2023.
How many dumb things did I say? Did anybody turn it off because I said I didn't see Oppenheimer yet?
I think you said less than 5 dumb things.
Oh, good.
So, Craig's listeners, thank you for your patience. We may just keep doing one of these a year.
No, we're going to do those 11.
We're going to do the 11 new movies on Craigslist. We're going to have Jamie Moyer as our
co-host. She's going to inject some energy into this old bag. I'm the old bag.
And the podcast is the old bag.
You're right. The podcast is the old bag.
But thanks for listening. Enjoy the Oscars. Go see some movies in the theater. Go enjoy some performances. Take a friend. Take a loved one. Argue about it. Agree about it. It's wonderful. This country is falling apart.
Craig, stop recording.
The world is getting scarier and worse all the time, but there's still movies out there that we can
For now. It's an election year.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
The list is an absolute good. The list is life.